The lesson is from St. Luke. Allow me to read it to you. You're getting a healthy dose of scripture this morning. Do not be afraid, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give alms. Make purses for yourselves that do not wear out. Sell your possessions and give alms. For your Father, where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Give alms. Blessed are those who wait for their master and who wait for him to return. They have been faithful servants and good servants. Blessed are those who the master finds waiting for them. If he comes during the middle of the night or near dawn, blessed are those slaves. But know this, if the owner of the house knew at what hour the thief was coming, he wouldn't have come. You must always be ready to receive the Son of Man, for the Son of Man comes at an unexpected hour. The common good. Are you a patient person? I'm extremely impatient. That's not to brag, that's an excuse. But I'm extremely impatient. Today's lesson comes from a time when it was dangerous to be a Christian. It was dangerous to be following this young radical named Jesus of Nazareth. And he talks to his people about some of the fears they were facing, fears of persecution, arrest. So he says, fear not. You will receive the kingdom, a greater kingdom than you can imagine. Well, that was 2,000 years ago, or roughly 2,018 years ago. Now, if you're an impatient person like I am, would you say that's a long time to wait? Too many lifetimes, including mine. But if we've waited over 2,000 years, might those try your patience, however patient you are? Well, it helps us that we live in a country of relative security. We are not persecuted for our religious beliefs or lack of religious beliefs. People live in fear, though, in our country. We see thousands of people living in fear of being deported, people living in fear of being separated from their children by the government. They have fled persecution in their own homelands, and they've come here looking for safety, not necessarily always finding it. We see parents taking from their children and other crimes against undeserving and poor people. People fleeing persecution. On paper, Jesus is being simply pragmatic. He's saying, if the world would come to its senses, and you could say it didn't then and it hasn't yet, he's talking about the kingdom of the world coming to where it ought to be, not where it is. He's thinking about a phrase that was often used by our early founders, our founding fathers and mothers, about people who wanted a country that coexisted peacefully, at least on paper. And it was trying to get together and be guided by what came to be called the common good. The common good. Today's sermon and title are both stolen from a new book I read not long ago. It's called The Common Good. I took it out of the library and started reading it. And as soon as I started reading it, I said, this is the book I have to buy. And I'm very cheap and I don't like to buy books. But this one was worth $25 to me at Barnes & Noble. If you're like me on the cheap side and don't want to pay $25 for it, you can borrow it free at our very nice Bloomingdale's library right near here. I highly recommend this book. It tells a lot about where we are today as against maybe where we ought to be. You may recognize the title and the name of the author, Robert Reich. He's a professor in Berkeley in California. And he's been on the board of directors and other agencies of the government over many years as a public servant. Done a lot of good things. And this is an utterly superior book. It's a good way to look seriously about where we are politically, what is being done to help the common good, what is not being done to help the common good. I commend the book to you. If we graded people on attendance at church, and happily we don't, and said, you know, if you read this book or came to church this many times, you would get some kind of reward. Well, we don't do that. But if we graded people on books or on what they did or what they read, I would give somebody credit for 4 attendances at church if they took the trouble to read this book. It would be that educational and easier to listen to than most sermons. A commendable book, and I really commend it to you. It gives some Christian also examples of what might happen if we do something for the common good. In the lesson from Luke today, Jesus is simply saying that people who live with the right priorities will find that their lives are blessed. Not necessarily by being rich, but their lives are blessed by living with the right priorities for the common good, the kind of living that makes everyone richer. This is the idea of the common good. And it's not a new idea. It's not a brand new idea with Robert Reich. It comes way back before the New Testament, at least over 2,000 years old. Jesus knew about it and talked about it constantly. He wanted his followers to beware of the temptations of money, which tempt us away from the common good, which tempt us to compete with other people so that they don't get a fair share of the common good. Barely a week goes by when we don't see or hear of some new financial scandal. How many people, well-known people, have sold their souls for the uncommon good for themselves? What's in it for me? what's in it for me. I don't care about anybody else. It's a temptation. It was a temptation in Jesus' day. It's a temptation in 2018. We've had the savings and loan scandals with precious few of the bankers suffering any jail time or any serious penalty. Where is the common good? We've had the government shutdown scandal. How many people are in positions of power take advantage of their position of power to make money or to steal money? It's a real temptation, and we have a large number of people who give in to that temptation. There was a time, and most of you are old enough, you might even remember it. There was a time when leaders seemed to make some decisions, at least, based on the common good. What comes to my mind is President John Kennedy saying, "Ask not what you can do for your country, but what you can do, ask not what you can do for yourself, but what can you do for your country." That was someone who, at least in writing, on paper, was interested in promoting the common good. You can argue about how well he did or not, but at least he was saying, "I'm concerned about people. I'm concerned about the common good." Now, that was about 60 years ago, and some of our politicians since then have had a change of heart, and it's spelled money. Because we've come a long way. Did God shower the United States with a million blessings? Blessings for some, for the common good. Did he shower us with all of these blessings that we have so that we can sell our country, our stocks, whatever, to the highest bidder? Where is the generosity that broke open the world and created the Marshall Plan to help a recovering Europe recover from World War II? Where is the words on the Statue of Liberty? The Statue of Liberty, who said, "Give me your poor, your tired, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed, to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door." Don't see much of that from our leaders in our politics today. Now, I don't know what your ancestry is in terms of background, geography, but I do know that at some point in your life, at some point in your life, one of your neighbors, one of your relatives gave you a victory in terms of coming or being part of the United States. They helped you become Americans, or children, or great-grandchildren, whatever, of Americans. Have we forgotten the good luck that we had, or somebody else might have had? I don't know who some of my ancestors were. My family has never been one for ancestor worship. But I know not too many generations back, ancestors came from Germany, and other ancestors came from England. And I had nothing to do with their love, with their working hard, with their being citizens. But they gave me things that I can never understand and helped me live and helped me prosper and helped the common good. One time in the early church, it was remarked, "Behold these Christians, how they love one another." Can that be said of us as we go to vote in the coming elections? Can, when we talk about politics, do we love one another? Do we have a love for the common good? The common good. Is Mr. Reich being naive when he talks about the common good? I hope he's not, because if he is, we're in trouble. What about the common good? And it's not a new idea with him to rejoice in the common good. It comes from Jesus. And from some of the Greek philosophers, even before Jesus, who gave us our word, democracy. We talk a lot about democracy. Do we see democracy? Do we practice democracy? It's a simple common good, but it doesn't seem so simple since it's so hard for us to do. Think about the common good that you read about this Sunday. Think about the headline that come to us. This past Sunday's New York Times Magazine talks about the common good, and its headline in the New York Times Magazine is, 30 years ago, we could have saved the planet. 30 years ago, we could have saved the planet. It's not a happy ending. There was a conference in Holland, and there was almost an agreement where nations of the world would try to cut back carbon emissions and climate change. There was almost agreement, but it fell through. If I ask you to tell me in one word why it fell through, and the one word starts with M, can you guess what the word is?
Money.
Money. It was an expensive proposition trying to make the world whole again, and the nations of the world gathered, and the majority of them said, well, not now. It's too soon. It's too expensive. We just can't do it. And here we are, 30 years later, with wonderful weather. I'm joking. We can't breathe. We can't breathe the air. We worry about flooding. I grew up in Louisiana. I know what flooding is about. I know what it's like to have too much water. A group meeting almost worked. It almost worked, but then it didn't. And here we are about 50 years later, living with incredible weather, people dying of the heat, people dying of lack of water, people dying in fires. This is our world. This is our world. The Times, New York Times, wonders if it's too late. That's a serious wonder, a serious doubt from the New York Times. Is it too late? Our own government pulls out of the Geneva, the big accords a couple of years ago. We're not in it. Most of the world still is. Where is their concern for the common good? Where is a sense of brotherhood? Brotherhood and sisterhood. Because we are still, like it or not, all brothers and sisters on this one small planet, which is heating up as we sit here and talk. Is it too late to reverse the forces which would restore our world, our planet, to the common good? Think about our priorities this August Sunday. Think about the priorities we try to espouse. Because we are still, if we think about it in a Christian perspective, we're still members of that early, early, brave, fearful fellowship of Christians from 2,000 years ago. Have we lost our way? Have we lost our way? Is it too late to change our lifestyle? Is it too late to challenge? Jesus still challenges us, I believe, I hope. Will you join with me in making our society one that is truly interested in the common good? It's an awesome challenge, but it lies before us. An awesome challenge. Can you be committed to the common good? It may be too late, depending on what articles you read. And that's scary. That's fire and brimstone talk. In a Presbyterian way, we don't get excited about it, but is it too late? We're not sure. And it's a risky bet to think that it's not too late. Think about it. It's something to think about, and it's something to worry about. Amen. I didn't mean to hit you with brimstone, fire and brimstone on a high